All right, so on the expenditure side, they identify the transfers and the debt as two of the larger expenditure items. Now, on the debt side, one of the implications of what was announced two Fridays ago by the Minister of Finance, the Prime Minister, where she said she was going to suspend making payments to external creditors, and she was going to continue to roll over the payments to the, or ask the domestic creditors to roll over payments in anticipation of a debt restructuring. One of the implications of that is that what she means is that she intends to renegotiate the debt with these creditors. So that, for example, if, just hypothetically, if you have a bond, if the government has bonds out and those bonds are they're paying, let's say, 7% on those bonds, and they have to pay them back over 10 years, what they might do is that they might go to the creditors and ask them to, again, as an example, reduce the interest rate to, say, 4%. And pay it back over 20 years. Now, it would mean ultimately a loss for that creditor, and the creditor would have to do it with the understanding that the government also does certain things, that it doesn't get itself back into that position again. So that is one way that you can reduce the costs, the interest costs, and that is one of the ways that was, the major measure that was proposed in the campaign. The debt reprofiling, when mm-hmm. people ask, well, how are you going to pay for all of these mm-hmm. things? That was the major one. Now, of course, that requires negotiation, because you're asking people to take a loss, and it requires negotiation with the creditors, and you would want that they would agree to that. So that is not as...
So it's not a foregone conclusion.
Well, the timing of it, the scope, the scale, those things are not foregone conclusions. The fact that it will happen seems to be foregone, but the extent of it, no, I think that is where the negotiations come in mm-hmm. to determine how much and to what extent and all that.
I read some of your opinions on this, but I still want to ask this question for the benefit of the public in relation to, on one side, people saying it's financially prudent, it gives you some elbow room and so on the pro side. On the con side, people saying you're defaulting, mm-hmm. and that seems very bad, and we had the downgrades. Now, when people are talking about renegotiating the debt and all these things, restructuring, there was really no discussion. People like you, economists, mm-hmm. would know that it will come with a downgrade, it will come with defaulting, mm-hmm. these words and so on. And I remember people actually poo-pooed when Minister Eswick said so, mm-hmm. that would be a default. The persons, the critics on the other side, they're saying that the whole default and the devaluation actually is something negative. Devaluation, all these D words. Anyhow, the downgrades and coming so swiftly, they're saying that it actually shows that we're making bad decisions. How do you speak to that?
So, all right. So the challenge is when you default. So yes, it is a default. It's what's mm-hmm. called a selective default. In other words, you've taken some of your debt and decided you're not going to pay under mm-hmm. the current terms and conditions, right? Mm-hmm. The challenge with that is that if you had lent me money and I came back to you and said, you know what, I'm supposed to pay you back $20 tomorrow, but I just don't have it. Until I pay you back, you are not going to lend me another cent, correct, right? Exactly. Correct. So the challenge is that for a government or for anybody that gets into that situation where they've said openly they're not going to pay for the time being, for that period of time, they're not going to be able to access any finance. And any finance they access is going to be at very high rates. So as an example, before two Fridays ago, the yield or the interest rate, if Barbados wanted to borrow externally on some bonds, was about, let's say, 11-12%, around there, right? 10-12%. Immediately, the Monday after the announcement, mm-hmm. that went up to 30-something% also. Now, whoa. Of course, you know, it's whether it's 12 or 39, nobody's going to really borrow at that rate.
Correct. We're borrowing 30-something% for sure. Right.
But it kind of just gives you an indication of what investors are thinking when you make decisions like that, right? Whoa. That the rate of return they need to get needs to be astronomical in order for them to do that. Now, of course, if you look back at the reserves and the trend in the reserves over the last 5 years, the thing that was causing the reserves to fall was the fact we were having to repay the debt. So from the time you immediately announce you're not going to repay it, the thing that was causing the fall has now stopped in the interim, right? So you would expect over the next, I would say, 6 to 12 months that the reserves should stabilize, because you don't have to make those large payments. The challenge is, like I said, if you needed to borrow, you really don't have capacity mm-hmm. to do that on the external side. And of course, if the domestic creditors are expecting that something is going to happen to them too, they themselves might have some apprehension as well. Mm-hmm. So that's important.
There's a school of thought out there that we should have, because a lot of the debt is local debt, domestic mm-hmm. debt, that we should have pay the external debt and just renegotiated the internal debt. What is your take on that?
So I can understand that school of thought for sure. I think the challenge is that from a domestic perspective, you can, so both debt allows you to finance a fiscal deficit, right? Your operations, if you want to build roads, buildings, etc. On the domestic side, if the credit, if the domestic creditors decide they don't want to lend you money, you have options. You can increase taxation in domestic dollars and Barbados dollars. You can, or you wouldn't want to, you can rely on the central bank, which has been what's been happening for a while up until now.
What they call printing money.
Printing money, yeah. Or you can determine that you want to, as the central bank did last year, June, raise the reserve requirement on commercial banks, which is to tell them, instead of every $10, for every $100 that you have, we want you to give $10 to the government for finance your deficit. Instead of doing that, we want to give you, want you to give $20 now. So you have options on the domestic side. On the external side, no, you can't force anyone to do anything, right? And of course, in order to finance imports, you need foreign exchange. So if you make a decision on the external side, it tends to be a bit riskier, because if you shut yourself out there, there are no options. You can't, you can't tax the external people more to get foreign exchange, right? Or you can't, you know, increase the reserve requirement on them, because you know you're not their central bank. So you, you reduce your options there, and it's, it's often seen as the sort of thing that is very, I would say, last resort. So in Jamaica's case, they restructured the domestic debt and not the external. And a year after that, they went back and borrowed externally, right? But another country, if you do that, until you get things sorted out, you might not be able to access the external markets.
I have two calls on the line for you, Corey. One from Carlos Fort, who, as you know, is a Bajan in Canada with an economic background. There's a gentleman on the line they're going to put in with him who also talks or wanted to talk about the question of restructuring debt. So I think they're both on the line now. Good morning, gentlemen. You're there?
Good morning.
Hi, that's Carlos. The other caller, you're with us?
Is that me?
Yes, that's
okay,
you.
Good.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, good. So you can go whichever one you want to go with first. The caller's been there before, Carlos, and then you go.
Are we going to one? He's on an overseas call.
Carlos is in Canada. Canada, yeah, right, okay. I've called him, so that's all
right. Okay, no problem.
Right, covered.
All right. So right. So we're talking now about the servicing of the external debt. The school of thought that we should have really serviced the external debt and seek to restructure only the domestic debt. So it'd be interesting to start there with both gentlemen. Let's go with Carlos first, in relation to your thoughts on that.
Good afternoon, Corey. Good afternoon to the rest of the panel and to Barbados. I actually do agree with that particular school of thought. I do believe that, considering the fact that the domestic debt does constitute the vast majority of our debt, over 2/3 of the debt, that we should have limited the debt report filing to the domestic debt. I would not attempt to rehash what I believe Shane Lowe would have expounded. I largely agree with his sentiments in that regard. There are risks associated with effectively defaulting on the foreign debt, which could result in shutting us out of the capital markets, international capital markets, for a considerably long period of time. There are larger countries than ours, more diversified, that has went that route. Argentina being one example, they have found substantial difficulty being able to raise funds on the international capital markets. The flexibility that they have, which we don't, we have a fixed exchange rate currency. They have a floating currency, and their exchange rate will adjust accordingly. Well, we do not have that latitude. But I do understand perhaps why the government may have sought to include the entire, all of the debt. Because it appears as if the new administration is relying significantly on debt report filing to give them the fiscal space that is needed, both to reduce the debt and also to provide some elbow room for some of the spending that they have announced. And it is for that reason, though, that I am glad that they have sought IMF assistance, because I believe the IMF would ensure that the necessary fiscal prudence and discipline that is required would be brought to bear to ensure that we do not pursue the type of spending that certainly the government has announced thus far.
All right, let's go to the other caller and get your perspective on the matter.
On the debt reprofiling?
Yes, please. And particularly the school of thought out there that we should have serviced the external debt and reprofiled just the domestic debt.
Well, Corey, back sometime in 2016, I wrote a little news article suggesting that the only choice that we had at that time, which still applies, was that we would have, one, to loosen fiscal policy, which most economists here don't want, but we would have to loosen fiscal policy, seek to refinance the foreign debt, or default, or a combination of all. So I've been saying that since 2016. So inverted commas, default was not any kind of big surprise for me. Because mm-hmm. it's something that I would do, all right? It's very, for that, for me, that part is very straightforward. So as far as it comes to reprofiling the domestic debt, for a certain sovereign currency issuing government, that is a point I always like to make, whether it is a floating currency or a fixed currency. With the fixed currency, we have certain constraints. They are not fiscal, though. We only assume that they are fiscal because we tend to claim that any excess in fiscal spending, which means creating the deficit, goes directly to imports. That has not been the case since 2008. The propensity to import is fairly stable, right? So it does not necessarily go straight to imports. So for me, reprofiling the debt, let me be careful how I put this. I really have no issue with that either. It is from the perspective that you look at it. If you were going to say to me, we don't have details, of course. So I'm just speculating here, okay? If you were going to say to me that you were going to do a deal, like Shane was suggesting, from a 7% to, say, a 4% or a 5% down, at a new rollover time, to institutional bondholders, notes and debenture holders and bill holders, I'd have no issue with that either. Because for me, that is corporate welfare. And they basically have ways to earn back that 2 or 3% reduction. But if you go to household bondholders and you try to cut them from 7% to 4%, right, that is equivalent then to a pension tax. Because they have no other way. The central bank has already in 2013-14, I think it was, liberalized interest rates. And the central bank then begged us to come over to them for these bonds. So in truth and in fact, what you are doing in this instance, in that particular instance, if you reduce that government debt, that portion of government debt, you are effectively reducing household savings. That I leave it there for now.
My thing is when persons have to make decisions, listening to you illustrious gentlemen, I always wonder, how do they know which direction to go? Because here we have Shane and Carlos, they're saying, you know, they're leaning on the sign more of looking at the servicing the external debt, the foreign debt. And you saying, you know, defaulting, you expected is what you would do. So, but both positions sound equally convincing. So sitting in the chair, even if I'm an economist or not, listening to you guys, I always wonder how does the person in the chair decide which advice to take?
Yeah,
and that is a very, economics is a very, very funny thing for me.
No, it's a contested discipline. Mm-hmm. It's a contested discipline. The problem is too many economists treat it like if it is a single way of a school of thought. It's a contested discipline. You're going to have disagreements.
But I understand. Go ahead, Carla.
I would say the way that any policymaker would, I would say, calibrate varying advice, of course it would be helpful if they themselves is training the discipline. I know there's a school of thought that the Minister of Finance probably does not necessarily need to be an economist. That may be true, or could be in some circumstances. In circumstances where they're not, they certainly should surround themselves with a variety of good advisors who are trained in the discipline. And I would say, in giving advice, what you should do is outline the pros and cons associated with any advice that is rendered. And that places the individual in a position to be able to then make the decision, as we make decisions in all different spheres of life, once we have a good sense of what the pros are and what the cons are. And then ultimately a decision can be made.
That's correct.
I would say as well, it depends on what your objectives are as well. So if you default on the external debt in the short term, it gives you space. What it means, though, is that unless you fix the problem, and if you don't fix the problem, and you say you're not going to be in the external markets anymore, and I'm not saying that's what the government has done. I think they're trying to fix the problem as well. Or that's the intention. But if you don't fix the problem, and you're locked out of the external markets, it means that all of the foreign exchange that you consume on an annual basis needs to be financed through a combination of exports of goods and services and, let's say, foreign investment, but not public borrowing. So you have automatically constrained yourself to be only able to finance it through those two means. But at the same time, in the short term, you may get some of the benefits. So it really depends on the objectives you want. Is the objective to maintain the reputation?
But let me ask this big question. Actually, you address Shane first, and then I can ask this big question.
Yeah, I was just going to tell Shane.
Yeah, take us to 12:30. Go ahead.
I was saying I absolutely agree with that. Mm-hmm. But adding to that, right, when you said we can actually do it by exports and, well, dealing with the external current account, basically, and leave out foreign born in the markets, I would add to that, though, that the position we are in right now, this is something I tried to explain on Brass Tacks once, but I couldn't find the words really to get it then. As it stands right now, our total net international reserve position, right, it is made up basically of central bank foreign reserves and net foreign assets in the commercial banking sector. So for those listening out there, let me call them ordinary bank reserves. Just forget the NFR and that NFR as well. So basically what has happened is those reserves have increased. So trading in foreign currency within the private sector is not an issue. Our real issue is that the central bank, who does not earn foreign reserves, but only peel off a piece of what else is earned, are running out of foreign currency. So they have no way, well, there's one way I could think of, or a couple, but generally speaking, they have no way of earning foreign reserves. They have to peel it from the private sector. All right? So they are the ones that need to borrow. But we don't have a problem within the private sector. Shell's not bare. But we tend to lump the whole thing. We say international reserves, we're down to $400 million. It is just not true.
This is the point you were making earlier with Mr. Ellis in relation to the reserves.
Yeah, I was trying to get
private.
That point out, yeah.
Yeah. I think he came out the next day and it was very funny. So.
But Corey, from 2010, when the central bank came out and said we're reducing the portion of your reserve requirement from 6% down to 2%, and I think they cut the deposit, the initial deposit amount that when new currency was coming in, the banks just basically said, well, sweet. Right, and they started to fly and hold more and more and more net foreign assets. Just kept climbing until it went past.
Let me just clarify a few
things. Yes.
Sure.
So yes. So I think the 2% he's speaking of is that for every $100 in US, a bank in deposits a bank gets. So if a person has a US dollar account, and they put that money in the bank, the commercial bank gives the central bank $2.
Yeah.
At the same time, back in 2011 or 12 or something like that, what happened is that the central bank introduced what is called a surrender requirement to the commercial bank, so that for every $100 that you buy, say from a hotel, you have to give up, I think, like $5 or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay, in addition, there are certain restrictions that commercial banks have, so that on a weekly basis, I think it's every Wednesday it's reported, there is only so much excess foreign currency assets they can have, liquid assets, above the liabilities. So it's very difficult for a commercial bank to hold liquid foreign currency on its balance sheet without having to sell it to the central bank. To the caller's point, though, if you look at the private sector side of the trade, exports and imports and what's not, that burn on foreign currency has been getting less and less over the last few years. The thing that has been growing is on the government side. So if you want to separate into private sector and government, the government has been more of a drain on foreign currency than
Correct.
The private sector. So that is why it fits in the government side, notwithstanding all the discussions we have about, you know, new markets and all. Those things are very, very important. But those things have not been the driver of the problem in the recent times. And that's why we keep emphasizing fits in the government side and that will help to fix the overall problem.
But let me ask a pointed question before we go any further. And this for our listeners again, what is the problem?
the problem is that you collect foreign, you have a bank account that's mm-hmm. called a foreign exchange bank account as a country, and that bank account accumulates foreign exchange through exports, as well as if somebody invests in it and they lend you money. Mm-hmm. And that bank account also uses up foreign exchange by importing, and if you pay back people for the money that you borrowed. Mm-hmm. The challenge is that you're getting more and more coming in from the tourism side and those, you know, exports. You're not paying out until recently as much in oil and in food and, well, you know, consumer imports, because mm-hmm. demand has been quite constrained. But you find that people are not lending you as much as they were before, and you're having to pay them back at a faster rate. So
a faster rate.
So, and that is because of the credit rating, because in your life you like to spend a bit more than you earn, and people have decided, well, this thing looking a little shaky, they might default. And
as the non-economist in the room, let me ask the question. Listening to you guys, it sounds as though then we are supposed to constantly live on borrowing. That's what it sounds like.
No, we're not supposed to. We have, typically you find that countries will have what's called a current account deficit, which means that from a trade perspective, they'll spend more than they earn. And what they've traditionally done is to finance that with investment. Because if $100 million comes in here to build the Hyatt, money's going to go back out to get the foreign
exchange,
the materials and stuff like that. So that's a natural thing. Now, that speaks to another issue of whether we should have that deficit in the first place, right? Mm-hmm. Which is a whole different thing. I think you can agree that you want to shrink that deficit. But in terms of the trends are that we've had this deficit for a while. But back in the pre-2009 days, what used to happen is that the investment that was coming in, mm-hmm. all these, you know, people buying second homes and all that, those things paid for it. And now those things have slowed down. And then the government's credit rating doesn't give them the capacity to fill that gap in the short term.
Well, no, we're galloping towards the 12:30. But go on, caller, because I got a lot of questions. I want to know how we're fixing it. I want to talk about so many things. Go ahead.
A quickie to Shane about the excess liquidity in foreign currency in the banks. Mm. You know, the way around that, though, Shane, is for the banks to have it held outside at their parent companies, and on their books it goes in as due from banks abroad.
That's
and the local ones here. So they get around that very easy. Mm-hmm.
Well,
you agree?
What is important to recognize, though, I agree with the sentiments expressed, is that part of the reason why on the private demand for foreign exchange has been constrained is because the government's policy stance has been to contract aggregate demand. In circumstances where the economy was also contracting over the best part of the period post 2009. And that is in part, well, you can say maybe the policy succeeded there, but it's not a policy stance that lends itself to growth or development or increasing the well-being or livelihoods of Barbadians.
Yeah. What I'm going to do, I'm going to ask all you gentlemen to hold, and those callers on the line, you hold too. We're going to be right back. Remember, we got to take the latest from the 12:30. We're going to take the 12:30 latest from the Starcom Network News. Just 5 minutes, and we're going to be back with you. You listeners, don't you move. This is going to get really informative and very interesting really fast. So this is brought to you by Williams Industries Incorporated. We'll be back with Brass Tack Sunday.
Now is the time for you to fence your property with galvanized green, white, or brown chain link fencing and our brown band galvanized pole pipes, which are the longest lasting. We will give you a free estimate too on all your fencing materials.
For building supplies, big or small, at Brilliant Metals we have it all. At Brilliant Metals we have it all.
Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
Yes, 23 minutes before 1. Remember, we finish at 15 minutes after 1. This is Brass Tat Sunday. I'm your host and moderator, Corey Lane, backed by technical operator and producer, Mr. Dennis Johnson. We have on the line two experts. We have Carlos, and we have, I believe it's Mr. Odoley.
He
won't want me to call his name. I know you can say so. We have Shane Lowe, president of the Barbados Economic Society, in studio. Before we went off to the break, if we could just start back where we left off. And one of the things I don't want us to forget is really the topic for today. What does the IMF program mean for Barbados? This particular WhatsApp jumps out at me as he says, Corey, can we have a conversation about an IMF structural adjustment program that is likely, and given our current fiscal and economic profile and what it means for governance and day-to-day grassroots life in Barbados? Furthermore, let's have some discussion on what was imposed on Jamaica and Grenada specifically that facilitated the current growth trajectory. So those are the things I believe that Barbadians really would want to know. If we can look to our neighbors as almost like an economic crystal ball and what we can expect and the type of results we can expect coming out of those types of things. So I'll back up. Yeah, please do.
From where I left off, just in answering your question, what really is the problem? I was making the point that part of the reason why there's been sufficient foreign exchange for the domestic or private sector needs is because the economy has been in contraction. And the previous administration pursued a deliberate policy of what economists would call dampening aggregate demand, which has the effect of reducing consumption, which has the effect of reducing production and investment. Now, if we are to grow, we invariably would need more foreign exchange. And the way that Barbados gets earning it through exports, by foreign direct investment or by borrowing. Now, there's been a precipitous fall off in our portfolio investment as well. Wow. So that's to a lesser extent, though. Since what's now called the Great Recession, we had a major fall off in foreign direct investment from a peak of $1 billion on average. And since then, I'm just wrong, maybe $200 to $300 million. We need to be able to increase foreign direct investment by at least $500 million a year. Even though the global environment has improved, we've had some difficulty in attracting that magnitude of investment, in part because of the downgrades, in part because of policy uncertainty with respect to the government policy, which reduced confidence both domestically and for foreign investors. But the real problem now is really the government finances. The situation is, and I say government as an institution, I'm not referring to administrations, it is our government. The real issue is, for quite some time now, the government has been living beyond its means. Beyond its means in an attempt, yes, to continue to provide the services that Barbadians have grown accustomed to. But the fact of the matter is that since the recession, we had a significant decline in revenue, and that followed by the business that we would have lost from the offshore sector, where revenue there was reduced quite considerably as well. And the government simply has not adjusted to that reality. The government has to adjust to that reality. What it has been doing is essentially borrowing to continue to meet those obligations. In the process, we build up a significant amount of debt, not for investing, not to build future capacity, but to simply seek to maintain the status quo. And now that has reached the point where the debt has grown so significantly that debt servicing now has become an issue at the forefront that is now driving the deficit in circumstances where even adjustments were made to try to reduce successfully so to some extent, to reduce expenditure, both in terms of wages, but also in terms of goods and services. So where are we now? The issue really is and that's why debt reprofiling is, I agree, it is the correct approach, But that has to be complemented with addressing the transfers and subsidies to statutory corporations, as well as to individuals, which include pensions, pensions to retired public servants. And the government is going to have to contemplate pension reform for the public service, where public servants would be asked to contribute toward their pensions, as well as the government contributing to those pensions as well. And as it relates to the solutions and where the IMF comes in, I don't think we need to be surprised. There's been a series of Article 4 consultations, including the last one. And those the recommendations there speak to much of what I have just described.
Well, I got to be a George Bell on this one. Firstly, IMF. If we are happy to accept that a country will be proud of going from 28, this is not Barbados, from 28.2% in 2016 to 24% in 2017, that is Grenada, and that is unemployment, right? And claim that they are turning things around. You got to ask, turn it around, who for? You got 24% of your population not working. That means that they're poor, right? Now, Shane, back to what you just said just now, I'd like to approach, bear in mind, I am not an economist, Corey. I did business administration. So my approach comes from there. All right? I have had formal economic training, but I'm not an economist. I always approach the whole overview from what I call a sector financial balances perspective, right? And the sector, to put it in the nitty-gritty, the sector financial balances will tell you straight up that the balances of the domestic private sector plus the balances of the domestic public sector plus the balances of the foreign sector equal to zero in the aggregate means that they must balance one way or the other. What that tells you in a nutshell is that if you try to reduce, and this is something I was trying to get onto brass tacks last Sunday with, if you try to reduce the fiscal deficit at a rate greater than you are able to push the external current account deficit of balance of payments towards surplus, you're going to keep the domestic private sector in deficit or push them further into deficit. The end result of that is increased debt to households and businesses, right, or reductions in retained earnings and savings, or both. As it stands today, right, the total private sector domestic debt to disposable income is 85.5%. And that has been climbing from 2013 steadily, right? Now, Shane, that is a reality. No matter what the IMF and everything says, that's a reality. And we all know that it is private sector debt that brings the downfall of countries, not public sector debt with a country that is a sovereign currency issuing government. That cannot be, you can hit me over the head for saying this, no Shane. That type of government is not fiscally constrained. They are restrained from the point of view of real resources. Now, if we can indeed call foreign reserves a real resource, because you know what I mean, then you're constrained in that respect, yes. I stop in there for now.
Well, it's not. I would say it's not a zero sum game, and
it has to be.
I dare say this.
That's Carlos on. Mm-hmm. That's Carlos.
This is Carlos. And in the period 1994 to 2007, the Barbados economy did particularly well, given innate constraints and so on. But we did not run current account deficits on the balance of payments during that time. What made up the difference there was foreign direct investment. And that's part of the reason why the government was then pursuing this unsustainable policy, I think, of land should reach its most its highest economic value, because most of the foreign direct investment was coming in that form. So it certainly cannot be correct to say that we would have to be running surpluses if the government is reducing its fiscal deficit, because this anomaly that we have experienced in the last decade is really out of sync with the macro, the economic model that we have run successfully prior to the Great Recession, which affected Barbados in 2009. Government has to adjust. That is a fact of the matter. Government fiscal deficit has been a considerable drag on the economy in the past better part of the past 5 to 8
How could putting more into the economy rather than taking more out could be a fiscal drag? It can't be.
Yeah, well, when government
runs fiscal deficits, it means for the man in the street that the government is putting more money into the economy than they're taking out. That is
a very basic understanding of the role of that.
Exactly. That's a very basic
understanding. Let me elucidate.
Go ahead.
The reason why it has been a drag on the economy is because the government has had to tax the country to the hilt to seek to finance that deficit or to cut. Well,
you don't create money to finance a deficit. The deficit is a net result of money printing.
Just give me a chance. I understand that. And I was about to correct. They misspeak.
Okay, good.
Right? Government has had to tax quite significantly to try to cover some of its obligations. Right? And in so doing, they have contracted the private economy, right? Which is really the catalyst for growth in any economy, mm-hmm. right? Unless we have a communist arrangement, right? And those arrangements, of course, have failed. Even China has opened up their economy to facilitate capitalist and private investment and growth and that type of thing.
So you talk about fiscal crowding out. That don't exist. That is a myth.